add some technology, whether it's a person or whatever. So, you know, we're looking at how we could do that as well.
What if, like, on the...
One of the things that we're, that we, you know, we've talked about the guidelines and about the services to the employers and services to the individuals, but I know there are other things that happen, like all the stuff with the NIS, you know, somebody needing to go out and get those people in line, the e-government thing, you know, advising on those kinds of things. You know, those aren't really addressed by either of those two categories. Well, maybe they are in some way that I haven't gotten my brain around or whatever, but I see that as, you know, kind of a third thing that the commission does. And I'm wondering how that fits into the overall picture.
Yes, to answer your question, I mean, yes, that is a role that certainly we play. It maybe in a sense fits a little bit into the employer aspect of it, because the state is one of the major employers, so we are dealing with the state on that relationship level.
Okay.
Then we also have the relationship of the fact that we are a state agency, and, you know, so we're a piece of that same puzzle. So certainly that is a role that we play. You know, as far as where is that defined, I guess it's not. We haven't addressed anything to formally define what we provide. In terms of what resources do we do that with, just whatever we can. I mean, you know, it's my time or whoever's time it is, Nancy Kaufman's time to meet with the people that are, you know, responsible for developing the online application, or, you know, I don't know if that addresses your question or not.
Well, I'm just wondering, so will there be something in the guidelines as far as, you know, that role with respect to state kinds of functions?
We hadn't really considered that, but it should be a piece of that.
Because otherwise it'll just kind of be stuck in there somewhere, you know, because it'll happen regardless, you know, and who else would people go to? I mean, I don't know who else the state, is there somebody else that they ought to be getting that worked out?
Well, this is Jonathan. I think that the state is a large enough employer that really they probably have a responsibility to employ somebody that is their job. Okay, but perhaps they see it as, well, we have an agency for that. So, you know, I think they see us as fulfilling that role.
You know, that's a place that I really see a role for the Board of Commissioners to officially communicate with the governor this point. And I think that would be a very good role that you all could do. So I think that would be a very good thing. I agree with Jonathan that there should be someone in administrative services, probably in the information technology part of it. There's various parts that relate, but there should be some expertise there. There is some expertise there. There's a number of the folks in the different departments that have worked with JAWS and do have some working knowledge of it, but there isn't a person that's the one that agencies would go to when they have questions.
Madam Chair?
Now, is that something that the person who's working, like, for instance, with the NIST thing could work into, or is that something that really basically the commission is doing and the state's just glad to have it happen?
Well, if I understand your, basically the way it is that, let's say with NIST or with some of these other things, we have seen, I'm saying consumers and we within the commission have seen, either because of our own experience or because somebody that was a consumer that didn't work for the agency came to us and talked to us about, this is a major problem. This is something that will prevent blind people from getting jobs with the state of Nebraska any minute now, you know, as soon as NIST is implemented, for example. And so we knew that, that there was no other entity that was going to really jump in there and enforce this to go through. So that is why we really got involved. I mean, we'd been involved from the very beginning. Every meeting it came up, we were re-emphasizing, you've got to have the requirements in your RFP, you've got to have your, make sure that the bidders understand accessibility and put it in their proposals, you know, at every stage. And of course they always say, oh yes, we understand, oh yes, it's in there. And so I mean, that piece was important too, but then once it, there was a contract, you know, we needed to keep their feet to the fire to, on the real concrete working of the thing.
So our, if I'm understanding what you're trying to say is, our involvement wasn't out of requirement or obligation, but out of our sense of responsibility that this needs to happen, and we are an entity that can assist in making this happen.
Well, and nobody else is going to if
right.
we don't. It's going to just
right.
go its merry way.
Right. But there was, if I understand correctly, there wasn't anything that obligated us to,
no.
to assist with this.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, other than, you know, responsibility to see to it that it happens.
Right.
But I mean, there wasn't anything that says, okay, the Commission for the Blind is the entity that has the responsibility for overseeing these concerns.
Right.
That's not the case.
Fatosh?
I have a question. In the future, or even with this, is there any way we can use our services as a soft match for our budget?
We looked at that. I can't remember the specifics right now, but the answer was no.
No. Okay.
Madam
but we
Chairman.
Did really look at that. Sorry.
Pearl, I was trying to declare what you want us to ask the governor for Nebraska employment, or what do you call it, human resources, to have a technology person who is familiar with JAWS and Open Book and all that to service these other needs? Or
well, sure. What Jonathan mentioned, which I thought was really a good idea, it wasn't with Health and Human Services and it wasn't with employment,
yeah.
like labor, but what I understood to be a really good idea is that the state of Nebraska has several different divisions within the Administrative Services Department that provides information support, technology support to state agencies. For example, the people we've been talking with about that server,
mm-hmm.
They administer server services to state agencies and provide the maintenance. The state of Nebraska has information technology helpers. They have a help desk we as state employees
oh.
can call when our computer is out. And so every state agency does not have to have an in-house technology expert for their own computers. And what he's saying is that since the state of Nebraska is such a major employer, they really ought to have a person that really, that is their expertise and can be the you know, the person to train all the other folks and to provide the one-on-one expertise to state agencies and so on. I mean, it could be all kinds of things. But
review contract proposals?
Yes, thank you. Right.
I mean, the questions about NIST should have been asked long before a contract was ever signed. And having the wording in the contract isn't always sufficient. You've got to have somebody knowledgeable on the board that's involved in that group that's helping to make decisions. And
right.
Would there be enough work, though, for a person to work for the state, not with the commission, that to just do adaptive technology or be an expert in adaptive technology?
I think so, because just like they do in a lot of positions in the area of information technology, there's always things to be done. And, you know, whoever that person is, their role would be, what would be be important to their role is to be highly integrated into all of the different areas of information technology. So I think there could be some overlap where you would not have any problem filling up a work week for that individual. Does that address your question? I mean, I think that even if that is their specific job, I don't think it's like you're going to have somebody that's sitting behind a desk twiddling their thumbs for, you know, 32 hours out of the week because no one's asking the question about JAWS.
Does any other state have such a
person? I don't know.
Person?
I don't know. It's a good question.
We could be the first.
That's what I was going to say. We could be the first.
Madam Chairman?
Yes, Jim.
Also, to answer Bob's question, another thing that this hypothetical IT person could do is free up a lot of Jonathan's time. Why should he have to come in and tinker with my computer when I'm having problems? I'm an employee. I'm not a client. Nobody's going to get money back from Social Security because of Jonathan's time with me. You know, so if we free him up from the staff and free Jan and Nancy Kaufman and all these people up from working with the staff, by using the IT guy from the state or the person from the state, you know, for our own employee needs, then, you know, we could guarantee him enough work just for the staff.
That's a good point.
Don't worry about it. And then we should be out there in the field working with clients, you know.
Yeah, well, and another piece of what this work group is looking at is, okay, let's look at what the state help desk, help people division, whatever, what all they do that we should be calling. Because to be honest, we, even though we know there's a number for the help desk for the state, most of us will call Nancy or Jan or Jonathan and say, because they're right there, and you say, my computer just froze up, what do I do? And so we need to train ourselves. We first need to learn what are the things, and some of the things they just provide, and some of the things they bill the agency for, but that's okay. We can do that. And so that's going to be looked at too. We've just kind of not used that resource because, well, Jonathan's right here, let me ask him. So I firmly believe we need to be, even before they would ever get a technology person that's really versed in these different software and packages, we need to be doing that right now.
Well, and also the state law that this things that the state buys be accessible. I mean, that could be a part of the person's expertise. So he,
exactly.
You know, rather than the agency, the specific person in the state.
Right.
Just what you were just saying reminds me that another piece is kind of our guidelines for services to the agency.
Right.
You know, when I started 7 years ago or however long it was, I don't think most of the counselors didn't even have computers. I think the secretaries had computers and a few other people, some of the blind staff had computers, but not everybody else did. And so as our use of technology grew and grew and grew, kind of by default, it became the technology team's responsibility to work with that and maintain it. But it was never really well defined that, yeah, this is your responsibility. We just kind of took it on and by default. And it is definitely one of those things that really, that's not our primary purpose for being on staff, and therefore it's probably taking a larger percentage of time than it should. So we do need to look at those other resources.
I think it's a wonderful idea of contacting administrative services to provide something for us. I like that idea.
And just to clarify, it would be more than just somebody to address adaptive technology concerns, yes, regarding blindness. It would need to be somebody that is adaptive technology in general. Although my experience has been that the other adaptive technologies that are out there, or of the adaptive technologies that are out there, the ones that are related to blindness seem to be the most intensive in terms of needing a lot of knowledge. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the mainstream some of the other adaptive technology that it's used are things like alternate keyboards or, you know, different things like that really boil down to you plug it into the keyboard port. you know, it's shaped different, so I can reach better with my hands the way they are. You know, there's not quite as much knowledge that goes into it, although it is an area, you know, that does require some expertise. So it needs to be somebody that's very well-rounded in terms of their experience. I guess just to, if there aren't any other eminent questions about what we've been talking about, I do have just a couple of other things that are on my list. NIST kind of came up already. Basically, NIST is, you know, it's not as bad as it was on day one. It's not as good as it needs to be. You know, they've still are some problem areas that have been identified. It's a work in progress, but you know, it's not always real apparent how enthusiastic of results we're getting to the problems that are identified, but I do think that there's hope, I guess. and I do think that there will be a point where it will be where it needs to be, but it's not going to happen without continued prodding, and we're doing what we can in that regard. So, I mean, other than that, I don't have anything specific to say about NIST. Another thing that was on my list was the online application for employment. Previously, when it was posted, it was designed in a way that didn't work at all with a screen reader. It worked to the degree that you could go in and fill it out, but unfortunately, if you were a blind user filling it out, you weren't always privy to what you were filling out. So when you would answer things like, have you ever been convicted of a felony? And you would answer no, you were actually saying yes. You know, gee, could that possibly inhibit your access to employment with the state?
Right.
I'm thinking it could. I don't know why it took them so long to fix it. I mean, we told them about the problem 2 years ago. The person in that kind of oversaw that area saw me, you know, 6 months later and was so enthusiastic and grateful for me pointing out these concerns, and you know, they just jumped right on it and fixed it. I went back to my office the next day and checked, and no, it wasn't fixed, you know. So we addressed it again, and they were going to fix it, and you know, so I kind of assumed, yeah, they got to it, and you know, 6 months later, no, it's still not fixed, and Nancy Kaufman has worked with them, and it finally got fixed when I just fixed it and sent it to them fixed. So.
Wow. Did you ask them for a paycheck?
Exactly.
No. but it, you know, I'd say that not to brag or anything, but I didn't fix the entire thing, but I fixed the major issues, sent it to them, and then they were able to see, okay, they finally understood what was wrong. So, you know, it wasn't just that I finally did it, but they finally got the information they really needed to be able to fix it and got the message. And as far as I know, it all works. Now, I have not gone through the entire application myself, and I know that there are some adjacent or some associated forms that I think can come up with it. But they, I was told that they were taking what we had done and they were working with that as well. So I'm assuming once again that it is fixed, but I have,
you know,
not yet actually gone through the entire thing.
One of the things this really brings up that I'd like to comment on is the checking to see what's done stuff. It can be quite time consuming too. And
yeah,
we'll do some work and make decisions that something's going to happen or provide information and it's going to happen. And then we're busy and we're doing our jobs and, you know, we take it that it was done. And so it is so important for consumers to just, you know, keep checking stuff, and
that's right,
even if you're not looking for a job, apply for a job and see if you can actually work the thing, and you know, all these things. If just periodically people would do that, and then, because I think sometimes, like with state personnel, I think they really thought that they had it, you know.
Yeah,
they really thought they did. And well, with the NIST folks, they really thought from the beginning, oh yeah, you know, we got that. And so the only way it can be checked is for a real person to sit down and actually go through the different processes and you know, apply for a fishing license online or whatever, you know, go on to the IRS, and anyway. So not the IRS, but state revenue, I mean, all of the different state agency forms and such, this governor is particularly strong on having it all really accessible to everybody. And so that, you know, that's a tremendous interest and effort, and if you all can do your part to get the right information to the right people or do the testing, that would really be terrific.
That's a great point, and that was actually the next thing on my list was e-government in general. There is a huge push for that, and all the workshops in the world probably are not going to guarantee that things are done correctly. But it's identifying things that aren't correct and bringing it to the attention of the appropriate people that will get it corrected.
Right.
So that's really all I had on that particular issue. The only other things that I really had on my list to talk about is a little bit about, and some of these things kind of came up before, just kind of some of my ideas for some things I'd like to be able to do with our technology team. And the area of training came up and the idea of doing workshops and those sorts of things. And one of the things that needs to be in place for that is a facility to do it. You know, you mentioned, Dr. Van Zandt mentioned the all the work that goes into preparing a workshop. Well, one of the major pieces is securing a location and getting the machines ready to go and all of that. One thing that would really reduce the amount of manpower needed to put on a workshop would be if we had a facility that could accommodate 4 to 5 students that we simply just had in our facilities. And I think that we've got the room for it in Lincoln, but we don't necessarily have the appropriate furnishings or the appropriate equipment. I would like to see us be able to get that put into place so that we can start, even if it's just, you know, maybe once a month we do a Friday seminar sort of thing, and just kind of work from there. I think that we've got the expertise on staff to do the training ourselves. Occasionally it might mean bringing in a vendor to talk about a particular topic, but I appreciated Kosha's comments regarding that, you know, they're there to sell a product. I think consumers would also be interested in some impartial information about some of this technology, and that's just something I would love to do, not only because I think it would be an effective tool, but I just love doing it. You know, it'd be fun to do those kinds of workshops once a month or whatever. So that's just something that I kind of see as a vision for hopefully not too far down the road. And again, it would be a way for us to eliminate some of the manpower that would need to go into doing some of those group trainings, because it would be a big chunk of that would already be secured. That's really about everything. I mean, I think everything else that was on my notes here kind of came up in conversation. So are there any other questions or other areas of the topic that people want to discuss or ask me about?
Jonathan Gidden, it's Robert Newman.
Yes.
Are you able to get your hands on new stuff in a timely fashion? Are there mechanisms to get your hands on new stuff?
You mean so that we can learn it?
Yeah, sure.
Getting our hands on the equipment is not as much of an issue as keeping our hands on the equipment. And what I mean by that is, you know, we figured out the resources to be able to order a PackMate almost immediately when they started shipping. That was a very hot item that, you know, there was a lot of interest in. So we purchased one. And we purchased it, and we had it, and it collected dust for quite a long time because it doesn't do any good to just simply have it there. We need the time to devote to working with it. It's now being used, and we got somebody that could use it and you know, experiment with it and learn it and kind of. But that's another issue that we struggle with that gets back to this whole idea of resources. We're only effective as our level of knowledge is.
Boy, and I'd love to have known that was out there collecting dust.
Well, and that's, you know.
I'd have been glad to experiment for you.
Yeah, the first one had a lot of bugs, though. You maybe wouldn't have been too glad. But anyhow, you know, we're only as effective as our knowledge. And as technology changes, if we don't have the time and resources as far as getting the equipment to experience it and learn about it, you know, our information is kind of out of date pretty quick. And that's not only for the technology team, but that's for all staff.
All staff, right.
And one of the things that I would love to do in conjunction with this idea of a lab is not only training for clients, but continued training for staff in the area of technology. One of the things is, I don't want to give anybody an impression that the three people who are technology staff are the only ones providing technology services. That's not even close to the case. We have a number of counselors that do a tremendous amount of training with individuals, and that's invaluable. But they maybe aren't having the same opportunities that we get, even though, I mean, and I just said our opportunities are limited. Their opportunities are even more limited as far as learning the new information about the technology. And so to have done a workshop with somebody 3 years ago, or for somebody to have learned how to use a screen reader when they were in training 5 or 6 years ago, does not necessarily equip them to do appropriate training today with a client. So we need to have the mechanism in place to continually increase in the skills of our staff in general.
Madam Chair, Jane Lansell?
Yes.
What about this, Jonathan? I don't know, maybe somebody's thought of it and already implemented it earlier, but you mentioned this PacMate that sat around for a while collecting dust. Why couldn't we enlist, get a volunteer, for example, a technologically sophisticated client, and say, here, George, you're really good with computers, play with this PacMate for a while and then come back and tell us all about it.
Yep.
And let him have it for 3 to 6 months and then, if need be, you can come back and train the staff on it.
Yep. So, and that's something that we've talked about before, and we've done that in some instances, you know, but that's a great practice. So, you know, there are people out there that would love the opportunity to have that for 3 months to
right.
learn and play with it, and we would love to absorb whatever knowledge they gain from that. So, you bet. That's an excellent idea.
Are there peer groups, Jonathan, that, you know, like technology guys, like what you do in Nebraska, you know, other states?
Like nationally, or you mean?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Iowa guy, or you know, just.
There aren't really like a formal peer group or anything where there's any kind of interaction. I think a lot of people know each other. There's some informal networking that goes on in terms of talking with you know, technology specialists from other states, or certainly exposure to them at you know, national events like. CSUN is an example. That's a big technology workshop and expo for adaptive technology that's in California. There's Closing the Gap up in Minnesota, and also there's the National Consumer Conventions. So, you know, there are opportunities for that, but there isn't a formal network that I'm aware of, at least.
This is Pearl. At the NCSAB, or as a part of that organization, one of the standing committees is technology and alternative techniques. And I could bring to that committee the idea that something could be set up to network with all the agencies for the blind to connect their technology people, and then they could figure out what would be the most beneficial connection.
Yeah.
But that's definitely something I could take to that committee.
Yeah, I think that'd be a really interesting thing, because there are definitely differences from state to state in terms of how things are done. The dynamics are very different depending on the region. You know, a small East Coast state with a very dense population is going to be a very different situation than a state like Nebraska with a very dispersed, you know, widely dispersed geographically in our population is. And, you know, we're going to be handling things differently when it takes 8 hours to get from one end of the state to the other, than in a state where it's a, you know, 1 hour drive and you're anywhere you need to be. Also, in I know a lot of more heavily populated areas, there's a much greater resource in terms of private vendors that provide technology services. In fact, in a number of states, you know, they don't necessarily employ a technology specialist. Their routine is to contract all of those services out. Now, I think that we have an advantage over that situation in one regard, because I'm not profiting off anything I recommend to anybody. You know, I can have a pretty wide open attitude towards whatever, you know, whatever equipment is brought to mind. But, you know, if we're hiring a Freedom Scientific vendor to provide our technology services, well, I imagine it's going to be Freedom Scientific products that are going to be recommended, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, so there's the positive aspect of it, but then the negative is what we've spent so much time discussing today is,
yeah,
where do individuals go, you know? You know, certainly certainly there are individuals out there that have, in the state of Nebraska, that have much more extensive knowledge of adaptive technology for the blind than I do, even though I do this full time. You know, I'm not going to even pretend to think that I am, you know, or that any of our technology staff are the most knowledgeable people in the state. You know, but we're the most visible in terms of, if you've got a question about adaptive technology, who would I go to? And so I do think that it's really important. And I think that the commission has a role in helping to make some of those other resources more visible. But like Robert mentioned earlier, definitely the consumer organizations could play an excellent role. And at least I think that's what you were getting at, in helping to make those resources more widely known and available. So.
Madam Chairman, Hubert again. Jonathan, you're talking about setting up possibly setting up a place where seminars or something could be done in Lincoln. What about looking into the alternative expense factor of the little shuttle, the newer kind of lunchbox-sized computers with LCD screens that could be boxed and packaged, go out to Grand Island, go out to North Platte, and do your seminars there?
You bet. That's actually a part of it. I would like to see it be, I think there are some advantages to a permanent classroom situation, but another piece of that is to have the resources to have kind of a mobile lab or a mobile classroom. I think that'd be a great thing, because with the computers as small as they are, there's no reason you couldn't load up very easily 5 workstations in a van, drive out to North Platte, set them up in an hour, and be ready to do a class. And Fatosh, if I remember right, a couple of years ago at the management retreat, we kind of talked about doing something along those lines. It was more kind of in talking about the vendor expos we used to have.
Yes.
And kind of saying, well, instead of having vendors come in and just giving a sales pitch, what if we just accumulated as much equipment as we could of different types, and we put that
Let's
on.
Do it. Yes.
And doing kind of a like a mobile thing where we, you know, do it once a year, and you know, we do one in Lincoln, yes, and one in North Platte, and one in, you know, wherever.
And I think we have the equipment and the expertise, and we wouldn't sell the equipment, as you said.
Right.
We don't have any obligation for me to say, well, you know, Braille and speak versus Braille note or voice note. I mean, all of them has different uses for different people. So I think we can be, and you know, we really do this every day. I mean, so I think we can really set up a great training expo for blind individuals that really teach and show things a lot better than
that. Right. And I'd like to add that the technology grant that we wrote a few years back, actually in very much detail, it didn't just kind of outline the idea, but we had a real clear plan for both labs that would be in a specific place, Lincoln, Omaha, whatever, as well as a mobile lab and how to make that work, as well as how to work with businesses. So, you know, if we can take pieces from that to implement, that we've got I think the challenge is always, okay, there's this great idea that is in place. I mean, it's been written, it's been thought out, it's been developed and proposed. We didn't get the funding, but if someone now would be able to just, okay, look at it again, and within the context of what we do have, how could we make it happen? And our challenge is always, you know, that takes a sort of reflective time, and nobody has that, you know. Jonathan has all the calls from the clients and the employers, as well as from staff. You know, all of us are so busy doing stuff. So, you know, it's not to, I don't want it to be as an excuse, but I do think it's a realistic challenge that we all face. We have tremendous ideas. I know the field staff have lots of really clear ideas of what would be the great thing to do to enhance the placement efforts, and lots of great ideas. And then, but then they've got all their appointments and there's meetings and yada yada. So it's a challenge. I think we all continually work to find ways to implement pieces. But one thing, if we could get a create that administrative assistant position, you know, that's more of a program person in a way. It's not just a secretary for the director. It really could have a bigger impact and role. And so that could be something that person could do, is really close themselves off and read this technology grant and think about what is the way that we could implement parts of this right now. So, you know,
how much money would be needed to put together the, you know, the equipment to staff you said there's find a room maybe in Lincoln to staff a setup that.
Well, you would want I think to be effective as a classroom type setting, the maximum number of students you would want would be 4 to 5. So let's say 5 workstations. So you've got 1 for the instructor and 4 students. You know, figure roughly $1,000 a piece. It's about, you know, for the computer equipment, somewhere in the neighborhood of $5,000. But then there's the furnishings in that current room are not conducive to that at all. And I don't even know. We were working at getting some bids, and I don't know did we ever get any final information?
We do not have the bids yet, but we did have the people that do the setup of offices come into the Lincoln office and kind of write up a plan. They actually gave us the plan, but we don't have any dollars attached to it yet.
I mean, I would guess somewhere in the neighborhood of a couple $1,000 for that type of furnishings. More?
More, yeah.
Is it? Yeah.
It's pretty expensive.
Yeah.
It might even end up being more than the
computers. The computer room, so I know.
Oh, yeah. Do you remember what that was?
It was about $3,000.
Okay.
So you're looking more
five. Yeah, I mean, what we're looking for are furnishings, a little different configuration, but mm-hmm. along the lines of what
same,
you got
yeah.
there. Mm-hmm. So.
Right. Wait a minute, Jane Rutsoff?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's a training area right there. On Fridays, when the center students are out having a seminar, you know, why couldn't we go down to Lincoln and use the computer room? There's 1, 2. Three, how many units are there for
those?
Three, and we can put one more, actually.
This is Jonathan. That's a possibility. One of the disadvantages to that, though, is that the other 4 days of the week, they need to be set up mm-hmm. to meet the needs of the students.
Yeah.
And one of the ways to effectively run a classroom environment is, let's suppose you're going to have 4 or 5 different classes that you do. You would have the computer set up specifically for how they would be set up for each of those classes. And you would have the process of setting those up be automated in such a way that when you get ready for Friday's class, Thursday afternoon, you go around and reinvent all the machines so that they're ready for that class. And then when you're ready for the class on the next topic, you reimage all the machines and then they're ready for that topic. So to really be an ideal classroom setting, that's what you would want, is the ability to have kind of exclusive use of that equipment. But, you know, certainly there we do have some resources already in terms of the location.
Would be a good thing to do as opposed to even at all. Ideally, you know, to be able to go to reimage, if you say, but you know,
sure.
In a pinch, you know, if we wanted to start doing this before we had that resource, then there we go.
And that might be a good idea to try that for a little while and see what the response is, see if this is an idea that even would be popular enough to be worth doing.
I think it will be if you specifically say, let's say you're going to work on jobs in use with Excel.
Yeah.
Let's say. I mean,
I need that work.
Yeah.
I tell you.
Or jobs with PowerPoint. Or, you know, I mean, it needs to be kind of specific. Yeah.
Well, Patoche, I'm sure you remember, what was it? It's been 6 or 7 years ago. We tried doing like a week?
Yeah.
A week where we had 5 or 6 individuals coming in. It was going to be like a week of intensive training. But it really turned into a week of chaos almost, because it was, it had too broad of a scope. The idea was somebody's going to come in and leave at the end of the week with all the computer knowledge they're ever going to need. And, you know, we tried, but we weren't as good as we thought we were.
But the thing is, I think the consumers are different than 7 years ago.
Yes.
I mean, 7 years ago, we were just starting ourselves.
That's right.
You know, so I think we can really do that, and it will be a lot more, a lot better.
Yeah, if you have a focused...
Yeah.
Topic,
yeah.
You know, or a focused curriculum that you're working on to teach a specific set of skills. That's a really effective way to do it. And I like, I really like the environment of a group training. There's certainly can be drawbacks to that. You know, you need to be careful that you're grouping people that are on a similar skill level, because otherwise the pace of the class is going to be dictated by the slowest participant, or your slowest participant is going to be left into the dust and be extremely dissatisfied with the training. Yep. So you really need to make sure that your students are well matched. You know, so that's a critical part of it. But if you have a set of well matched students, the conversation that goes on in the course of the class can sometimes lead to a lot more training than what was ever on the agenda. And you know, I really enjoyed the internet training that we did,
mm-hmm.
you know, with staff. Well, I just thought that was a great way to approach it.
And everybody has their own way of doing things, mm-hmm. and so it gives you other people some
other.
Idea, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It is fun. I've done some of that myself, and it is fun.
It's fun doing it, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because then you leave knowing, hey, I'm not the only one that's struggling with this. Maybe I'm not as dense as I thought I was, you know, this is just a difficult concept. Or, you know, or you walk away saying, well, that, you know, I learned some really great stuff from those people.
Mm-hmm.
And getting back to the idea of networking with each other, it provides yet another opportunity for some small group work to get to know each other on a little more intimate level.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, share phone numbers and call up your buddy from the class when you've got a question. So
yeah, right.
I think that there are a lot of positives that can come out of us providing that. But again, all comes back to resources, time resources, equipment resources, space resources, and it's a great idea, and I hope to see us doing it soon. I'm just not positive exactly how we're going to achieve that. So.
Okay, well, you know, this, I don't want to cut you off, but I also know that it's getting later in the day, and we could listen forever, and I think we could interact forever, and to me, that's one of the neat things about the technology part of things, is that it is dynamic. And part of the reason is the staff that we have in that area is dynamic. And I think that's a good thing. So did you have other things you wanted to share with us?
I'm trying to think, and I don't think so. Something you were just saying just kind of brought to my mind. You know, one of the, it is very dynamic, and a lot of the things that we've talked about involve, you know, really to get them done, it just takes somebody to coordinate them or to take the initiative or to get it going, you know. And one of the things that is frustrating in my position in particular is I'm the manager for our technology services, but I'm also the Omaha area technology specialist. And, you know, there are certain aspects of my job that are to be doing that kind of coordinating and the planning and the getting things off the ground. It's really difficult to do that when I'm also putting out brush fires all over the place and just trying to do, you know, the other responsibilities of the job. And that's, you know, one of the reasons why somehow being able to shift something duties, either those management duties to somebody else or the other responsibilities to another person. I guess that's just where I really feel that even though I know just hiring another person or another two people or whatever is not going to solve all of our problems. I'm well aware of that. I do think that it is an idea that is getting consideration and needs to continue to have serious consideration because of the fact that it would be very, you know, vital to making some of these things happen. I mean, I think that additional resource would be very valuable and wouldn't just simply disappear into this vacuum of need.
This is Dorothy.
John, Madam Chairman, this is Joe DeNeat, and I wanted to discuss something with Jonathan Ross.
I know you're aware of that Creighton and Bryant Technology Lab, where they got a, they got the money and they set up 23 computers in one room.
Mm-hmm.
And they did it very economically because they had just long, real long desks. And chairs. I know you've been there, so you could look it over and maybe even find out from Patrice how to get some money by that.
Yeah.
Maybe even do it there.
Yeah, I mean, there's...
Do the seminar there.
You know, and the other thing is I know that there are... I know there are dollars out there somewhere. I'm definitely not qualified to find them. But we're looking to do some very specific things. Those are the types of things that grant